Hey guys, I'm Logan.
And I'm her mom, Patsy.
And this is Chills, a true crime podcast.
One that's sure to give you chills.
All right, guys, we are on episode number 10. And I'm sure that you guys can hear that it's a little echoey. Again, we are doing this from two different locations because, well, time management isn't my strong suit. So this is who I am as a person. Let's just go ahead and get right into it. So today we are covering a case that is located in the UK. So let's just get right into it. So August 19th, 2004, it was a normal night for Amelie Delagrange. I don't remember how to say her name, even though I just literally looked it up. Delgrange. I don't know. I'm just going to call her Amelie. She was on her way home after enjoying a couple of drinks at a wine bar with her friends. Amelie was a 22-year-old French student who was furthering her education in the UK. Around 9:30, she got on the bus, but ended up missing her stop. So at the very last stop, she got off the bus and started walking home. Amelie noticed a white van following her. An hour later, after she had got off the bus at 10, or well, after she had actually gotten on the bus, because remember she got on the bus at 9:30, at 10:30 at Twickenham Green, a person walking by found Amelie unconscious next to a pool of blood. She was immediately taken to the hospital, but 2 hours later she was pronounced dead. Her autopsy revealed that she had been attacked with a blunt object, most likely a hammer. But Amelie wasn't the first victim. 18 months prior, Marcia McDonnell was a 19-year-old student who was on gap year in the UK. And on February 4th, 2003, Marcia went to the movies with a couple of friends, and after parting way with her friends, she got on the 111 bus. She got off at her stop and started walking home in Hampton, which is in South London. She was only yards away whenever she was bludgeoned with a blunt instrument. A neighbor found her lying on the street, bleeding to death sometime later. Marcia spent 2 days in the hospital fighting for her life before finally succumbing to her injuries. An autopsy found that she had suffered multiple skull fractures and bleeding around the brain. Investigators quickly linked these two cases together. Their first plan of action was to go over all the CCTV footage, because remember, Amelie had gotten on the on and off the bus, as well as Marcia, but they were really focused on Amelie's, like, video footage because it had happened, like, so recently. Mm-hmm. So they looked over a total of 2,000 hours of footage. And a huge breakthrough in the case came whenever they started reviewing all the CCTV footage taken from external cameras. The footage showed a white van had arrived at the green just before Amelie was killed and stayed for 8 minutes before driving off. They could not track down the exact van, but they did eliminate 26,000 Ford Courier vans during this time.
Wow.
Yeah. The real breakthrough, though, was when a woman called the police and suggested that her ex-boyfriend could be a potential suspect. His name was Levi Belfield. He had a rap sheet for burglary and assaulting a police officer. He was a wheel clamper who owned a white van, exactly like the one seen on CCTV footage. So, Levi was arrested early on the morning of November 22nd, 2004, on the suspicion of the murder of both Amelie as well as Marcia. Turns out, though, Amelie and Marcia were just the beginning of his victims. I'm going to go ahead and apologize real quick for the order of this story. There is so much to this case, and literally all of the information on the case is literally all over the place. Like, it's just all over the place. It's crazy. But basically, like, the police pieced together, after he was arrested for these two murders, all of these other cases. So, again, I apologize for the order. The information's kind of all over the place. All right, so we're going to talk about his very first victim. Okay, so this is at a flat in Rose Road, Witten. On October 15th, 2001, Anna Marie Ranney left her flat, which she shared with her then-boyfriend, Richard Lewison. She went on a walk to calm down after a row, which is actually a fight. So Real quick, side note, I love the way that like people from the UK talk, like flat, row, jumper. I love it, and I'm going to start using all of these words. So, all right, thanks. Back to the story. At about 11:30 p.m., Anna Marie, then 17, was near a bus stop in Hospital Bridge Road, where she was then approached by a man who drove up and was like sitting in the passenger side of the car. He talked to her for about 20 minutes, then grabbed her and attempted to drag her towards the car. The man used one arm to lift her up, pinning her arms to the sides, and clamped his other hand over her mouth to stifle her screams. Thankfully, she just kept kicking and like just struggling and like flailing her arms, and eventually got out of his arms and was able to run away. While running, the man called her multiple names like slut and whore. And she eventually picked Levi out from a identity parade, which is literally just a police lineup. But again, the words they use, I'm never going to say police lineup again. For now on, it's an identity parade. So Levi was never officially convicted for this crime. I mean, again, she obviously lived, but attempted to abduct her. Because the jury could never come to a verdict in the trial, but he was charged with it, but again, never convicted for it. So then on March 21st, 2002, which would have been what, like a year later? No, not a year later. It would have been like a couple months later because that one was in October. Okay, so March 21st, 2002, Amanda Jane Milley. I'm going to call her Millie because that's what she went by, but her last name was Dowler. So Amanda Jane Dowler, but she went by Millie. She was 13 and was reported missing by her parents after not returning home after school. So Millie had walked to Weybridge Railroad Station with a friend. The girls got off at Walton-on-Thomas Railroad Station, which was one stop before Millie's usual stop, and they went to eat at the station cafe. Millie called her dad at 3:47 p.m. to say she would be home in exactly half an hour. The girls left the cafe at 4:05, with Millie walking home alone. She was last seen 3 minutes later walking along Station Avenue by a friend of her sister who was waiting at the bus stop. A red Daewoo Nexia, which I have no idea what kind of car that is. I don't know what that looks like. Which belonged to Levi Belfield's girlfriend, Emma Mills, was photographed driving past the same location at 4:32 p.m. A missing persons report was filed at 7 p.m., so about 2.5 hours later, and a nationwide search for her followed, with 100 police officers and helicopters searching fields, streets, and the rivers. The family pleaded on TV on multiple occasions, and I even read that a pop star who Millie had went to a concert for like just a couple months before her disappearance, he even went on TV pleading for her safe return. So this is very much in the public eye, super popular. A week after Millie's disappearance, the police stated that she was probably not taken by force because they reasoned that while she was unlikely to have gone off with someone she did not know, no one had come forward who had witnessed a struggle despite the number of apparent sightings of her prior to her disappearance. How wrong they were. On April 23rd, 2002, the discovery of a body in the River Thames. I have no idea what that is, but okay. So the Thames River. There was a ton of media attention speculating that this was Millie, but the next day the body was identified as 73-year-old Maisie Thomas, who went missing in March of 2001 and whose death was not believed to be suspicious. So I can only imagine like what the family felt like, okay, oh my gosh, like this is Millie. Oh no, it's not. So I'm sure that that was like a terrible feeling. So then on June 2002, Millie still had not been found despite all of the pleas from her parents, and even a reward had been established for her safe return. And then I did read too that her parents texted her phone every day hoping for a reply. Which in 2002, did they even have cell phones?
I don't know. This was in the UK, so who really knows?
Yeah. Regardless,
You
I
know?
did read in an article that her parents texted her phone every single day, hoping for a reply. Because I know in the beginning they kind of thought that it could have been like a runaway or something. But obviously at that point they weren't really thinking it was a runaway, but they were still hoping that maybe she had ran away and that she would respond to their text messages. So then on April, nope, I don't know why I said April, that's not the right word. On September 18th, 2002, a naked human remains were discovered by mushroom pickers in the Yodalee Heath Woods, which is near Yodalee, Hampshire. Hopefully I'm saying all of that correctly. Dental records did confirm that it was, in fact, Millie. Due to the level of decomposition, the cause of death could not be determined. Yeah. Her clothes, her purse, her phone, everything that she had with her at the time of her disappearance have never been found. Initially, the Surrey police had considered Millie's father a suspect, and the family went through like some really like rough times with him. Like, they considered him a suspect, and so they questioned him and they questioned the family a lot. And they actually later apologized for all of the missed opportunities that their attention to this course of action may have caused. So, yeah, I mean, just because, I mean, whenever I understand that you have to focus on the family, but whenever you do focus on the family and it truly wasn't the family, you miss so many opportunities because you are so focused on someone who didn't do it. And so you miss, other things. So then on March 23rd, 2003, DNA of an unidentified male was discovered on an item of Millie's clothing in her bedroom. So they thought that maybe the killer may have met her before, but this link was ruled out within 3 months. So they confirmed that this person with the male DNA was probably not the person who killed Millie. This is where the story gets really crazy. So Paul Hughes was convicted of making threats to kill and was jailed for 5 years after sending letters to Millie's sister threatening to kill her and claiming to have killed Millie. Yes, but it gets even crazier. Paul sent the letters while imprisoned. Yes, he had indecently assaulted a 12-year-old girl and was in prison. And the prison actually apologized for not screening their mail effectively. Yeah. Crazy. Again, we're just getting started with the story. So,
Sad.
Leanne, yeah, very sad. So, we'll just listen to this next part. Leanne Newman of, I'm not even going to attempt to say this word. No, not even going to attempt. Okay, nuh-uh. She repeatedly called Millie's parents, the school, and the police pretending to be Millie. How fucked up is that?
That is,
Like,
wow.
are you serious? Ugh. She was jailed in April 2003 for 5 months after pleading guilty to 5 counts of making phone calls to cause annoyance, inconvenience, or needless anxiety.
Who does
Insane,
that?
right? Like, what kind of person does that? Like, that is, I cannot imagine. I truly can't imagine. And this is, she was doing this before and after her body was found. So, I mean, I can only imagine like how like excited they got whenever they heard, this girl who they thought could be Millie.
Yeah,
And
'cause you're
then,
desperate.
yeah, exactly.
You're
You're
desperate.
desperate. And you're gonna like, even if you know that it's like not your daughter, you're still gonna hope. Like, even if you can tell by the voice, you're just gonna be like, oh, like you're gonna hope. Okay, so then Gary Farr repeatedly emailed Millie's parents, school friends, as well as police officers who were working on the case, claiming that Millie had been smuggled out of the country to work as a prostitute and stripper at a nightclub in Poland, and that her alleged death had been a cover-up. He was later put in a mental institution, just because this guy was crazy. And I
Jeez.
yeah he I guess he truly did believe this, but obviously it was not true because this really was Millie's body. So then two different men had been arrested in relation to the disposal of a red Nehu Nexia, but later both were released without charge, which I don't really understand. That's literally all the information about that. I still don't know who the owner of the car was. I don't understand that, but regardless. And then on February 25th, 2008, so after he has already been, you know, in jail for the murders of Marsha and Amelie, the Surrey police confirmed that Levi Belfield was their prime suspect in the murder and that they were very interested in questioning him. And then in March 30th, 2010, so 2 years later, he was charged with Millie's abduction and murder. And then on January 27, 2016, it was announced that Belfield had admitted to the abduction, rape, and murder of Millie. And then just literally a couple days later, on February 12th, he completely changed his story, denying that he had ever confessed to Millie's murder. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. I read in one of the articles that she was raped repeatedly and tortured, but I don't really know if this is the case because of her level of decomposition. I don't think that they were able to tell if that was true or not. So I'm not sure, but I don't really know why he would literally admit to abducting and raping her and then murdering her and then completely change the story. I don't really understand the point of that, but I would say that she was probably likely raped.
Wow, 13.
So then, 2 days before Millie's disappearance, Rachel Cowles, who was 11 at the time and looked a lot like Millie, said a man in a red car claiming to be a new neighbor had offered her a lift as she walked home from school in Shepperton, which was 3 miles from where Millie vanished. She said, no, thank you. And then a police officer actually drove by going in the opposite direction. And the man in the red car immediately drove off. And then whenever Rachel came home from school, her mom actually called the police right after this, but a statement was never taken. Then when Millie went missing and the police said that they were looking for the same car, the mom called again, but again, nothing ever came of this. So it's kind of crazy to me because if they had just taken the statement, maybe this wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was literally 2 days before Millie disappeared.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they would have been on the lookout for this car, who knows? Maybe this wouldn't have happened. So then let's move on to our next victim. So Katie Sheedy was celebrating her last day at school. Her and her friend went to a pub to sing karaoke. And then afterwards, she got on the H-22 bus to go back to her home in Isleworth. As she got off the bus, she saw a parked white van, and she got a really weird vibe from this car, so she crossed the road to avoid it. As she stepped onto the road, the van sped towards her, hitting her head-on. Yeah. Not realizing the extent of her injuries, and just honestly probably being in pure shock, she tried to stand up, only to stumble before falling back to the ground. She managed to scramble for her phone, calling an ambulance, and then calling her mother. Her parents ran from their house, which is only a couple yards away, because remember, she was walking home. And they found her lying on the street with her belongings strewn all over the road. She was in so much pain, she thought for sure that she would die, and she told her parents, I love you, Daddy, and I love you, Mommy. Once at the hospital, they found out, the true extent of her injuries. Her lower back had been ripped open. Her liver was split in two. She had multiple broken ribs and a broken collarbone. And somehow, she had managed to keep breathing despite one lung being punctured and the other being collapsed. There isn't a bunch, there's not a lot of info on the whole investigation process for this case. But what I'm assuming happened was that she probably saw Levi Belfield on the TV after the murders and recognized him as the man who was in the white van. Again, not a lot of information on this. I have no idea, but this is what I'm assuming. No idea. Thankfully, though, she did end up pulling through, even though her injuries were so severe. And then in 2007, she faced him in court to give evidence against him. And it said that he taunted her by smirking and winking. Yeah, so I can only imagine, like, going through that. And I know that she said that she would not, like, walk alone. She wouldn't ride a bus. She wouldn't do anything, like, by herself. After that, she had, like, really, really bad PTSD. And she stayed at home for a long time, which I can only imagine. Okay, so that is the it for his victims. Now let's get on to his convictions. So Belfield was found guilty of the murders of McDonald and Amelie, because I'm not going to try and say her last name, as well as the attempted murder of Kate on February 25th, 2008. The next day, he was sentenced to life imprisonment with a recommendation that he should never be released. And then on March 30th, 2010, Belfield was charged with Millie's abduction and murder. And then this is directly a quote from Wikipedia because they just said it best, and I wasn't even going to try and say it any other way. So they said Belfield's second trial began at Old Bailey on May 10th, 2011. And then on June 23rd, 2011, the jury found him guilty. He was again sentenced to life imprisonment the following day, and the trial judge recommended that his life sentence should mean life, just as the judge at his trial for the other crimes had done 3 years earlier. The trial of Belfield on another charge, that of the attempted abduction of the 11-year-old girl, who he had again, member, offered a lift to, was abandoned due to newspapers publishing prejudicial material and the judge ordered that the charge should remain on file. So he wasn't convicted for Tinsley. He wasn't convicted for the attempted abduction of the 11-year-old girl, but it is like the charge was on like his file, if that makes sense. So like whenever they look up his, like rap sheet and stuff, it shows that he was charged with it, but he was never convicted of it. And that was literally due to all of, the publishing of the, prejudicial material. So then, in February 2008, Belfield was named by the police as a suspect in connection with numerous unsolved murders and attacks on women dating back to the 1990s, as well as the murder of his childhood girlfriend, who was 14 years old at the time, and her name was Matsie Morris in 1980. Police were informed in early 2015 in his cell at HM Prison that he had admitted to unsolved rape and murder cases. But on October 9th, November 2016, the Metropolitan Police issued a statement which said all lines of inquiry have now been exhausted and the decision has been taken to close the investigation as there is no evidence to link the individual to any case which he has not already been convicted. And then the police believe that Belfield may have lied about the murders that he had admitted to in prison so that he could inflict pain on those women's families. Yes. He was said to be a man who hated women, especially blondes, because all of his victims were blonde. Yes. He fathered 11 children with five different women. And then in October 2019, he attempted to commit suicide but ended up living. And then I did come across a January 2020 article, and it was said that he wrote a pen pal that Lynn Russell, who was 45 and was found battered to death in a daylight hammer attack with her 6-year-old daughter in 1996, was his type. And there was some other information apparently on, like, in this letter, but the police haven't released it. And the police believe that he may have been involved with this murder, but someone else has been convicted for the murder. And I guess at some point they did try to get his conviction overturned due to the possible involvement of Levi, but not really sure what's came about that yet. Again, this was just in January 2020, so I'm sure a lot more will come of this. And on multiple occasions, there were prison inmates that say he confessed to the murder of Lynn and her daughter. Yeah. And so he's named the bus stop killer because of the way that he killed women after they got off the bus.
Wow.
But yeah, that is it. That's all the information I have for Levi Belfield, the bus stop killer.
You know what I can't stand about them? Killers. A lot of them try to commit suicide.
Yeah, I know.
And it's like, you tortured these people.
Yeah.
And then kill them. And then you can't even live with your consequences of going to prison for the rest of your life.
No.
That's just horrible. These families are going through hell and will forever.
And I know. It's ridiculous.
It is.
It pisses me off.
Because that happens a lot.
It's bullshit. Yeah. Crazy case. And actually, like, that was kind of a short case. Like, even though there's a lot of information to it, that actually didn't take very long to cover. But I mean, we got a lot of information on this.
And we didn't chit-chat.
That's true. We did not chit-chat. We will chit-chat now, though. Do you have anything new going on?
No. Still doing the playroom. Or the game room. The flooring. I've been busy doing that.
I feel like I have like a trillion things to do, but absolutely no desire to do any of them.
Me too.
Like, we really got to get down to wedding planning, like, in detail. We did.
Yes, we do.
We did put a deposit down on the photographer, though. That is one thing we did.
But one step closer.
Yeah, one step closer. We do need to get down and get to the nitty gritty. I am having a holiday, like, / Christmas wedding, for anyone that didn't know. And we're getting married on December 5th. So super exciting. Oh, tell them about the trees that you found.
Went to Menards, and the guy said, I'll make you a heck of a deal. And we're like, what kind of deal? And he's like, well, I'll give you all 10 trees for a $100 bill. So we got 10 trees for $100, and some of them was $330 trees. So we made out like a bandit.
So at this point, we have like 17 trees.
Yeah. So we have decorations for the wedding.
Well, we have actually a lot of decorations because we knew that we wanted a Christmas wedding way before we even got engaged and started buying way ahead of time.
But that was a heck of a deal.
Yeah, that was a crazy deal.
Then I fell in love with the white one. Asked him how much for the white one. He's like $10. So bought it too.
Yeah.
And these aren't little trees. These are big trees.
No.
Full size trees.
Like $300 a pop trees. Yeah. Crazy. So I have to finish painting my office. I have no desire to do that, but I need to. And I also need to shampoo the carpet, but so much to do.
Just not enough time. Nope. Not enough time.
So little time. Not enough to do. Not enough hours in the day. At all.
True. Especially when you gotta sleep 8 of them and work 8 of them.
True.
At least.
Very true. Alright, guys. But that is it for this episode. As always, make sure that you guys rate and review us because that helps us out a lot and it also brings a smile to our faces. And then if you just want to say hi or send in a episode request, you can do so at Chills Podcast on Instagram or Twitter. And then we also have a Facebook page, which is Chills, a True Crime Podcast. And you can also email us at chillspodcast@yahoo.com. But that's all we got for you guys. So we will talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.